This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Massachusetts has some of the tightest gun laws of any state in the nation, with some of the lowest rates for gun violence as well.
Compared to other states, Massachusetts has very low rates of both gun homicide and gun suicide. But a high-profile panel said today that the state can and should do better.
House Speaker Robert DeLeo commissioned the panel in the wake of the shootings at the Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, Connecticut, more than a year ago. And the task force made 44 separate recommendations, from better mental health screening to better gun safety training.
Now, in a moment, we're going to be joined by Jack McDevitt. He's the Associate Dean of Research at Northeastern University, a criminal justice expert. He chaired the task force. We're about to get him on the program, but we're having a technical problem connecting with him. So let's go right to Jim Wallace. He's the Executive Director of the Gun Owners Action League of Massachusetts. That's the local NRA affiliate. And Jim Wallace, very good of you to come in. Thanks very much.
Hey, thanks for having me on this snowy day. It gets me out of that, that's for sure.
Okay.
Nice warm studio.
So 44 separate recommendations. It goes from saying that the task force says that the state should comply with national instant background check system. Let's start there. Good idea. What's your view?
Yeah, GOAL has actually supported basically coming in compliance with the NICS checks, especially the NICS Improvement Act of 2007, which would include more reporting for people who have been adjudicated as mentally defective or people who have been basically hospitalized against their will. Unfortunately, the governor's bill that has been filed for the last, it's now three sessions, to do that has been written incorrectly, and we've tried to correct that several times. Unfortunately, we don't have any communication with the governor's office, so it's difficult to come to terms when we need to change something to move it along. But
I'm going to jump right in, only because we've got Jack McDevitt.
Okay.
So let me spend a minute or two with Jack McDevitt, then we'll come back with you. As we said, Jack McDevitt is chair of the Gun Violence Task Force. He's the Associate Dean of Research at Northeastern University, and he chaired that task force. Jack McDevitt, thanks so much for joining us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, sorry about the technical problems there. So let's talk about these recommendations, 44 separate recommendations. What are some of the most important that top that list?
Well, we think that they all will make the Commonwealth a safer place. We think that all of them have a role to play in making what we already have, which is a good licensing system, even better. But some of the things that we did that we really tried to focus on was trying to give discretion to police chiefs to identify who shouldn't be suitable for having a gun. Right now, there were different standards across different kinds of licenses, and what we tried to do is to say for gun owners that they should be able to predict what kind of guns they where they can get a gun, and also for other people, they should know that if there's been a history of violence, even if there hasn't been an arrest, then that might not be a person that's suitable to have a license.
Yeah. On the one hand, that sounds like it makes sense. But on the other, I could imagine people saying you're going to deny, local police chiefs are going to be able to deny gun license to people who have been arrested but not convicted of a crime. Doesn't that violate the idea of innocent until proven guilty?
Well, that is the state of the current license to carry right now. So that is current law. But the fact is, and no one would say that you should do it for one incidence of what police chiefs told us when we met with them in the committee is that they've gone to some houses 5, 6, 7, 10 times for disturbances, and nothing ever resulted in arrest. But they know that that's a problem person, and they didn't want to give them a license. And the quandary that we found was that they would deny them a license to carry, but under current law, they could then go and get an FID card and buy a rifle. And so we thought this should be consistent across.
Right. You also recommend that the state comply with a national instant background check system. What has stopped Massachusetts from doing that in the past?
In the past, it's been the mental health records. Massachusetts has some laws that make it unclear whether they can share mental health records. And so what we think is that two things. One is that we should be sharing involuntary commitments to the mental health system as is required by the NICS system. But we went a step further and said we found no evidence in any research that said that individuals who have who are mentally ill are more likely to be violent with guns. But we did find evidence that people who've been committed for serious chronic substance abuse might be more likely to hurt themselves and sometimes to hurt others. And so we've recommended including that group as a prohibited group for getting guns. People who've been involuntarily committed for substance abuse, what they call Section 35s.
All right. So that's obviously an effort to people who might do harm to themselves. So essentially to deter, bring down the suicide rate.
Yeah, remember that there's 2 gun suicides for every gun homicide in the United States. So what our report tries to do is to deal with gun accidents, gun suicides, gun homicides.
Yeah. One of the points you make in your report about guns is that a lot of guns come into the state, which Massachusetts has, as we mentioned, strong gun control laws, from neighboring states with weaker gun control laws. You write, some 60% of crime guns used in Boston were originally purchased outside of Massachusetts. New Hampshire is a prime source of gun trafficking in Boston. What can be done about that? What does your report recommend?
Well, we recommend, first of all, that every gun used in crime get traced. And what we mean by that is to send the information to the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Bureau, and they tell you where that gun was first purchased. Now, you maybe can't follow every sale or transaction, but you can know that their guns are coming from a particular place. One of the things we know is that gun markets are different than drug markets. They're smaller. They're more people who are known to each other. So we think that they can be disrupted easier, but you have to have the information. Mm-hmm. And not all police departments are tracing guns, and the information has to be shared outside law enforcement so that, you know, the media can get at it and academics can get at it. We can have a deeper understanding of the gun roots as they get those 60% of the guns get brought into the city of Boston.
I see. So right now, that trace, that ability to trace, it's not as robust as you'd like to see it?
It's not. Boston traces all of their guns, so do a number of other communities, but not all communities.
I see.
So we don't know where some guns are coming in from. So we think if it was all there and it was all in a database, then we could understand a lot more about how to interdict those guns.
Let me ask you about something that John Rosenthal, who's the founder of Stop Handgun Violence, brought up earlier today. He said the state should include copycat weapons on the list of banned assault weapons, like the weapon used in Newtown, Connecticut. If I haven't had a chance to go through your whole report, because we only just got our hands on it about in the last hour, but I understand that your report did not include such a recommendation. Why not? No,
we didn't. We spoke to police chiefs about that. And John is a wonderful person who's dedicated his life to this, and it doesn't mean that there aren't other recommendations that could be made. But for us, what the police chiefs told us was that it was just getting too difficult to identify whether this gun was on the list or off the list, because what happens is manufacturers change the designation of the gun once it's on the list, and the gun comes back in, and it becomes a cat and mouse game. And so we didn't go down that route. Others may want to, but we didn't see that as a fruitful way to intervene in the guns.
All right. Well, that's Jack McDevitt. He's the chair of the Gun Violence Task Force and the Associate Dean of Research at Northeastern University's College of Social Sciences and Humanities. Jack McDevitt, thank you very, very much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day. Yeah, good day to you as well. So let's go back to Jim Wallace, executive director of the local NRA affiliate, the Gun Owners Action League of Massachusetts. Okay, Jim Wallace, so we've got a couple of specific things to talk about. One of the ideas from the task force was allowing local police chiefs to deny gun licenses to people who have been arrested but not necessarily convicted of a crime. On the one hand, that might sound reasonable. Do you have problems with that recommendation?
Well, yeah, it actually goes a lot further than that. The suitability clause is not just somebody who's been arrested for anything. I mean, the suitability clause is actually very loose. There don't have to be any arrests. There doesn't have to be any record. If the chief simply doesn't like issuing unrestricted licenses in his town, they don't issue the licenses. So we have a huge problem with the suitability clause.
Well, let me ask you about that, because we just heard Jack McDevitt say, look, in a lot of cases, the cops will go back to a house again and again and again and again because of a disturbance. You know, aren't they within their right to sort of say, look, it's clear, even though there hasn't been an arrest, that there's some instability in that house. This is a guy we don't trust. We're not going to give him a gun license.
Well, you know, in all of that discussion that I've heard in the last probably 2 years on this specific issue, I have asked time and again, can you document to us specifically where there has been a problem? Mm-hmm. In other words, where you've been in a situation where you've chose to deny somebody a license to carry, but you've given them an FID card, which means they can own a rifle or shotgun, can you document how many problems there have been? And to date, we have not had one documentation of an issue. So are we talking about an non-issue just so we can talk about gun safety and gun control? Or is there really a need to look at this? And so far, we have not seen any evidence anywhere that there's actual need.
All right, let's move on to another thing we heard Jack McDevitt talking about. Some 60% of crime guns used in Boston originally purchased outside of the state. He wants every gun. He wants to see a more robust ability to trace these guns. Sound reasonable?
Well, I mean, the trace ability is already there, but one of the things which the committee ignored, because we actually didn't get to take part in this process, was Goal's Bill, which is our criminal firearms and trafficking division that we have proposed now. This is the third legislative session. And what that would do was actually put in place a special division of the state police that would be attached to the Attorney General's office to investigate and prosecute all state-level gun crime. And in that piece of legislation, we specifically call for a database of all guns used in crimes. So we already have that. We've been fighting for that now for 5 years, and this is the third session, but we just can't get anybody to get a hold of it.
All right, but separate from consideration of that particular piece of legislation, right, the way that Jack McDevitt described the need for more robust tracing, you're basically saying that's a good idea. That's okay.
Yes, as long as we're actually tracing guns that were used in a crime. And one of the things that Jack may or may not realize is that the term crime gun, when used nationally, does not necessarily say that gun was used in a crime. Currently, any gun that is traced by the ATF is automatically labeled a crime gun. Mm-hmm. And in the last report I saw, which was several years ago, 75% of the guns were not used in crimes. They were just simply traced.
All right. So the concern there is what? Too much tracing of guns that aren't necessarily involved in crime.
What happens is you just bog down the process. It was like the proposals many years ago where they wanted a shell casing from every gun that was put into a database. And even after a while, the experts realized that's just too much.
One more question about this report. The task force says that all private firearms should be completed through a licensed dealer. Again, to many people, that might sound reasonable. What's your concern about that?
Well, Massachusetts, we already do not have any lawful sales that do not include a background check. Mm-hmm. Right now, one of the things I heard when I was over at the press release was, well, we need to make sure that guns sold at gun shows have a background check. They do in Massachusetts. Matter of fact, no guns are sold without a background check. Even if you're a private sale, you have to be licensed, the person you're selling has to be licensed, and you have to fill out a state form. So there's no such thing.
All right. Well, that's Jim Wallace. He's Executive Director of the Gun Owners Action League of Massachusetts. Obviously, a lot more discussion ahead in the days ahead about what Massachusetts will do about this issue. But Jim Wallace, thank you very much for
coming. Thanks for having me.
Well, coming up, 200 years ago, new machines enhanced human physical power. Today's machines are poised to supersede human brain power. We're in what some are calling the second machine age, and we'll find out why when we come back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.